There. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the All Portable Discussion Zone, a bi-weekly live stream all about amateur radio portable ops. My name is Charlie. Call sign is November Juliet 7 Victor. And our two co-hosts, Brian and Dan, have other commitments and are not with us this morning. We're excusing them. But I am so pleased to introduce to you today's guest, Steve Hartley, G0FUW. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon, good morning, depending which side of the pond you're on.
Yeah, for sure. Of course, I always want to have those of you who are in chat welcome you and have you drop comments and questions in as we go along. So welcome to you guys. We're happy that you could join us this morning. Hope you stick around. If you have a comment or a question for Steve, please go ahead and throw that in the chat feed, and I'll do my best to get him to respond to that. And don't forget that this show does convert to a podcast. It's usually available 24 hours or so after the show, sometimes a little earlier than that. So let's get going here and hop right into things. Usually what we do, Steve, is we kind of go around the room with the people that are here and just kind of get caught up in what's been going on or what we've been doing the last little bit. And so I'll just start, and then we'll ask you a few questions, and then we'll dive into more depth into why we're here today. Cool. So just for the viewers, I have not really done a whole lot other than I did do a Summits on the Air activation last weekend with my friend Herb, N7HG. He lives on the Navajo Nation, and so he's way up in Lukachukai, and he drove down. His drive was around 3 hours. Mine was around 4 hours. We met halfway in Flagstaff. We hiked a couple of summits. One of them was pretty difficult, and it really took us a while to get to the top, but got on top. And we actually had some problems with Herb's radio. He had actually, it was not his radio. Well, it was his radio and his antenna. So Murphy's was really hitting him hard. He had a 10 meter antenna that just we could not get to function properly. And then when we finally got it plugged into my radio, it wasn't working. And then, you know, his radio was not producing any RF, but luckily we have redundancies in the backpacks, and we made it work. So that's kind of what I've been up to. I also have done a little bit of stuff on the bench. I'm preparing for Rex Harper's Build-A-Thon. I'm going to be helping him by hosting that on this channel as well. It's going to be on his, and it's just a little kit that we're going to build. And I was going through the parts and getting everything ready for that build. That's tomorrow afternoon, unless he changes the time. But so with that, Steve, I understand you've been working outside doing non-ham radio stuff as well.
Yeah, this morning I've been gardening over here. It's springtime and the sun is shining. It's been a lovely day. We've had lots and lots of rain through the winter, and everything's very wet, but my wife told me I had to get out in the garden today, so I do as I'm told.
That's funny. And I like that you call her Mrs. H. That's pretty cool.
Yes, you have to show some respect.
Very good. Okay, well, so yeah, I was outside doing a little work myself today. It's a beautiful day here. I'm not sure what it's like over there across the pond, but we're in 70s right now today, so perfect. Yeah.
It's not that warm, but it's above freezing, so that's
good enough. All right, well, so Steve, I'm so happy to bring you on board today. For those of you who are listening, we're going to be talking all about QRP and homebrew and the kit building and all that kind of stuff. And Steve here, he's been talking about this and sharing that information and training people and doing presentations for quite a while. Quite an expert, although he's probably humble and won't say that he's an expert, because we always are learning. But I view him as one, especially compared to where I'm at with all this. But so Steve, let's go ahead and get started a little bit first with your background, just kind of who you are, maybe what you did for a career, and if you want to share anything other than that, like your personal, like kids or anything like that, and where you're at with that, just go ahead and do that as well.
Okay. Well, I'm semi-retired. I was a civil servant. I worked for the UK government for many years. Partly in the defense world, and also in what we call the Home Office, which was to do with immigration, prison service, forensic science, all that kind of stuff. And my background originally was in explosives. So around about what year would it be? I can't remember the year. Anyway, I went to join a new job, and my boss said, "Oh, by the way, you're the I think what they call in America the safety engineer or health and safety officer." And I knew very little about it. And he said, "Well, you've worked with explosives for 20 years. You haven't blown yourself up. You must know something about safety." So, so I got myself into sort of general health and safety type stuff. Got myself qualified. I'm now a chartered safety practitioner, and ended up working in the Ministry of Defence, dealing with people who were doing some very dangerous things, but trying to keep them safe, and generally it worked. that was my sort of background, mainly in government, but it was very much with not pen pushing so much as being on the practical side of things. And and then after 30 something years in that, the UK government decided they were going to sort of get people out on early retirement, and they made me an offer I couldn't refuse. I took the money and ran.
Yeah.
And since then I've been working. Well, while I was working, I used to do some work with a Portsmouth University, which is on the south coast of England. And they gave me more work after retirement, and I've been doing that ever since. And then I had my arm twisted to become a director of the Radio Society of Great Britain. I did that for about 6.5 years, and had to give that up because my mother was sort of terminally ill. And then shortly after that, I had a tap on the shoulder and asked me if I'd become the chairman of the QRP Club. So that's where we ended up where we are now.
Yeah, good. Well, so do you find yourself more busy or less busy now that you're semi-retired?
Oh, much more busy than working. it's the classic thing where people say they never realize how much have they had time to go to work, and that's certainly the case. I do wear lots of different hats and do lots of different things, and there's never a dull moment, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Well, hopefully you're happy with all the additional stuff that you're doing. But we'll be talking about the GQRP Club in a little bit, but that's pretty impressive that you are part of the, what is it called? The RGB, what is it?
RSGB, yeah. Radio Society of Great Britain.
Yeah, that's the equivalent of the ARRL down here. So,
I've been involved in the training community, amateur radio training, for a long, long time. And when the guys got wind that I was retiring, then I was sort of very quickly swept up into sort of officialdom and sat on the board. And I actually ended up as chairman for a year and thoroughly enjoyed the time doing that. But say, if I can't commit to doing something, I don't want to do it sort of half and half. So when my mother was ill, that I had to quit and put my priorities. She lived about 200 miles from me. So I was up and down the freeway, as you would call it, for every week, and trying to keep things on a steady keel. So it was a busy time.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. I'd be the same way. I wouldn't want to do stuff half and half, for sure. So there's a question already here, and more of a comment, a compliment to you, from Rob Walker, who you may know or may not. But he says, "Hi, Steve and Charlie. I want you to know that Steve does a huge amount of amateur radio in the UK, including teaching at Bath DL." You'll have to say tell me what that is. And he got me through my full license. He's a hero of mine. So that was
wow. Well, the Bath DL, that's a distance learning setup that we have. I've been doing radio training for a long, long time. And one time we had a guy who was a farmer who couldn't come into class on a weekly basis. And so we started sending him the material by post, and he would send his sort of answers to questions and things. And then we had a student who said, "We should be able to do this better now, with all the internet and things, we could do that." So we started doing a distance learning course via the internet. And we kind of expect we might get 20 people a year or something like that in a similar position to the farmer who couldn't attend local classes. And in general now, we get something between 100 and 200 people a year. And we've had 1,000 people get their top level license. So that was a milestone we passed earlier this year. It's absolutely blown away with the success that we've had. So, and it's not just me. I have a team of guys who do the tutoring with me, and I couldn't do it without them. I have to say it's a great team effort, and the feedback we get is always very positive. I have to say, and I'm blown away by the effort that people put in and the learning that people do and the questions they ask us, because then we have to go away and research and learn things ourselves, which is all part of the process.
So. Yeah, very good, very good. Well, so I've heard you say several times that you are involved in education and training of a ham radio. Are there, other than the GQRP Club, which we're going to get to right after this question, or maybe one more, and we'll start diving into that a little bit. Who are you affiliated with, or who do you work under, or are you your own entity when it comes to those different engagements?
Well, very much our own entity. The Radio Society of Great Britain, they run the exams, a bit like the ARRL have their voluntary examiners and so on. So it's, the exams are run by the National Society, but delivering training is entirely, you know, up to yourself. And some people just get the textbook, read through the book, sit the exam. They don't need any help. What we find is we try and guide people through the textbook and fill in the gaps between the, there'll be a bit of text and people say, well, that's fine, but how does that work, or why is it that the case? So we try and fill in those gaps and make it a little bit more understandable. That some of the theory can be pretty heavy if you're not a radio engineer. And I always say we get the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, you know, we've had dentists, car sprayers, you know, the whole gamut of radio amateur community. One of the great successes we had last year was a lady who'd retired from breeding cats, which was about as diverse as it gets. But she gave us a little story about understanding mixers, and she was sort of figuring out that if you get a black cat and a white cat, you mix them together, you might get some black, some white, and some different coloured ones. And that was her sort of take on unwanted emissions and things like that from a mixer. So it's great when you get little things like that and see people getting success.
Yeah, good. So then, so you I guess are a founder or co-founder of the Bath DL or whatever that is, and sounds like it's pretty organized. Are there other, so that is specifically for getting licensed, right?
Yeah, I mean, we got three levels in the UK. We got foundation, intermediate, and full, which are a bit like the US system. But you have to go through those three levels. You can't jump in at the higher level. We don't do the foundation level. There's a group called Essex Ham who do a great job on doing online training for that. And we point people to them. They point people to us for the intermediate level. So we do one course a year for the intermediate level and one for the full. But there are other providers. There's a great bunch of guys called the Online Training Community, and they're more of a fast track sort of thing. We tend to take people at a slower pace, whereas the online community, they tend to deliver more of a fast track approach, get through the material, get the exam, and away. And sometimes people come to us and say, we've tried the fast track, it's too fast. Can we join your courses? So there's a whole range, but there used to be a giant network of clubs that did this sort of training, but since the pandemic, that hasn't really taken off again. So I think last year we had about 30% of the UK's exam successes were from our training. So it's a pretty big deal. It's like I feel the weight on my shoulders sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let me recognize here our friend Tony, who we were just, he must know we were talking behind his back here earlier when we were offline, but welcome, Tony. Glad to see you're in here. Bath is the city that's where you're based out of in England, right?
Yeah, it's down in the southwest of England, and it's a beautiful place. And I just had a guy, we got a local repeater on 2 meters, and it's linked to the internet. And there was a guy calling one day saying, CQ, any amateurs in Bath? So I answered him, and he was in a place in the States called Bath. And he said, I never realized there was two places called Bath. And I said, well, ours was set up by the Romans. I think it might have been around for a little bit longer than yours.
Thank you for it. Yeah, for sure. That's funny. Okay, well, let's roll into the GQRP club then. It's kind of one of the main topics I wanted to talk about today. So I'm just going to throw the question out. What is the GQRP club, and let you roll with it and see where we go?
Okay, well, it's essentially a national club, but we've got international members, so we're not that sort of parochial that it's only about UK. But it's been around 50 years in September, believe it or not. We the club started in 1974, and the founder was Reverend George Dobbs, G3RJV, sadly no longer with us, but a terrific guy. And he posted a thing in a magazine and said if there was enough interest, he would start a QRP club. And over the years, it's grown and grown. And certainly for the last 10, 12 years, we've had about 4,000 members. I'd say the majority are in the UK, but we have got them all over the world, New Zealand, Australia, United States, Canada, et cetera, Brazil. So it is an international club, but the focus is on the UK. That's where most of our members are. What is it? Well, it's a club like anything else. We've got members, we share ideas, we produce a quarterly journal, which I just happened to have arrived today. Sprat is our journal. It's a wealth of knowledge in there, and we're heading very quickly for issue 200 for the 50th anniversary. People really value that magazine, the journal, call it what you will. In addition to that, we have club sales. So you can buy transistors, toroids, all sorts of things that are not quite so easy to get hold of, perhaps, for QRP construction. We have a bunch of books for sale, project books and things like that. And we have activity periods. The sort of main one is what we call the winter sports. That runs from Christmas to New Year every year. We started one called the Summer Sizzler, which starts around about World QRP Day on the 17th of June. And these are not contests, they're activity periods. So people get on the air, make contacts, have a bit of fun, and meet up with old friends and so on. And some of the logs that we see are absolutely terrific, and guys who use a different rig every day, perhaps, or once they've made a contact with one rig, they swap it for another rig and so on. So it really does get them quite active. So
a question on that. How do they report that out? I mean, do they share pictures and text? Is that like through the reflector, or how do they report that out?
There's certainly some of the guys post each day on the reflector to say what they've been up to, or if they're on the air and they're looking for contact maybe and they're struggling. But at the end of the period, they send a log of their contacts to our activity manager, Enzo, who is an absolute ball of fire. He really gets people G'd up and excited about these things. And then he looks at the logs and he will award a certificate for what he thinks is the best log. That might not necessarily be the one with the most contacts. Say it might be that it's got a variety of equipment, or perhaps it's somebody who's only used 1 watt throughout the thing, or they've been and camped up a mountain for 3 days or something. It can be any crazy thing, but Enzo does a great job of teasing out what he thinks is the best log. And he doesn't. We don't usually disagree, put it that way.
Yeah, good. I also wanted to ask, because I thought I saw something about certificates of some sort, like Workdology, like Workdology your members or something like that.
Yeah, we have a number of awards that we do, so that if you make a number of QRP contacts, you can get a certificate for that, and then endorsements for every extra 10 or whatever. There's also a certificate for the number of countries worked with QRP, and two-way QRP. That's another criteria. And then the one that's really quite rare to be issued is what we call the QRP Master, where you have to make a number of contacts, two-way QRP, different countries, all with maybe with QRP. And I forget the numbers exactly, it's on the website, but to get the QRP mastered takes quite a bit of work. And I think in the whole history of the club, we've only issued maybe 100 of those or something. So it's not something that happens very often.
Cool. So so how do people interface with the club then? And what I mean by that is, when you think of a traditional club, which isn't international, then you would have, you know, some oftentimes, not so much these days, but oftentimes a place where everybody would gather and share ideas and stuff like that. That can't be the case if it's international. So what ways do people interact with the club then?
Okay, well, we've got an IO group, which Tony Fishpool looks after for us, and that's great for exchanging information. And I have to say, it's very, very rare that somebody posts a question on there and doesn't get an answer. There's a whole bunch of guys who know far more about electronics and things than I do, and usually we get an answer. And it could be, you know, what's the best antenna, or what's the, and, you know, the usual sort of questions that you get in clubs. So that's ongoing all the time. We have an annual convention in sort of September time, and people physically get together for that. We usually have three, four speakers from within the membership, and share their sort of tribal knowledge. We have a build-a-thon at that, where we, you know, get people together and build a kit or something. And last year, Enzo was out on the lawn outside with his portable rig and a bit of wire, and he was working at other QRP stations, and so it's a general madness of a weekend, but great fun. It's not 4 days in May,
no,
but it tells us it's just 2 days in September.
There you go, 2 days in September. I think, didn't Rex go to that? He was staying with you and went to that, right?
He did, yes. He caused complete chaos, as Rex can only do. So I think there was 30 odd people in the room doing a no solder build-a-thon power supply, and people were amazed that they could do that. And he did us a good talk. And then he came and stayed here, and I took him out to see the ancient monument called Stonehenge, which he'd had a lifetime ambition to go and see this thing. So we went and...
Well, he was talking about Stonehenge, but he also said there was a better one that you took him to besides that. It was bigger.
That's called Avebury. Yeah, and it's a lot quieter, it's a lot more laid back. Stonehenge, everybody goes to Stonehenge. Avebury is kind of more, you need to know about Avebury. But yeah, amazing thing. So yeah, we had a good time.
Good. He said so too, and he said to say hi. So very good. All right. Well, so it sounds like anybody who does QRP, and especially anybody who is interested in homebrew or kit building, this club is a great resource. And I mentioned before we started that I would join, and I am going to join. I know there are some greats that are a part of this club and have been for a long time. For example, our friends over at Solder Smoke Podcast, Bill Maher, he often promotes the GQRP club and its founder. He talks about a lot and all that, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, Bill and Pete Giuliano did a talk for us at the convention a few years ago by Zoom, and that was very well received. And Pete's done other things with us. He did a presentation on a very simple SSB transceiver. And a lot of those presentations, by the way, are on our YouTube channel. We have a GQRP Club YouTube channel, and we record the presentations from the conventions and share them through that. And that's open to anybody. They're not just for members. Anybody can watch those. So, But yeah, Bill and Pete are great ambassadors. And I think Bill's phrase about if you're not in the QRP Club, you were wrong.
Yes.
I always say it's the best value in amateur radio. It's not expensive, and the information you get through Sprat in itself is certainly worth the membership.
For sure. So Tony Fishpool's in the chat. Maybe he could do me a favor. If not, I'll get to it eventually. People are wanting to know how to get to the Facebook page. I think that the GQRP website is in the notes of this stream, but then also the groups.io. And then also Solder Smoke Podcast is soldersmoke.com. So we'll hopefully get all those in for you guys that are asking about that in chat.
Absolutely.
Cool. Anything else about the GQRP club you want to mention before we move on to others?
No, there's probably lots and lots, but I mean, again, it's one of those things. It's run by volunteers. We don't have any staff. There's no paid officials or anything like that. And we just have a great bunch of people that chip in and do their thing. So we've got a guy who's a VHF manager who knows about that sort of stuff. We've got technical guys like Ian G3 RWO, who does lots of technical help. Tony does great stuff in behind the scenes, and the committee who do the membership and all of that, they do it mostly without complaint. There's occasional grumbles like there always is, but it's fantastic. It works, and we keep it as informal as we can to try and just get the best benefits out of it.
Okay, good. All right, now we're going to transition into the next set of questions, which are more about homebrew and kit building and stuff like that, how to get involved and all that. So, but my first question is, how did you first get your start into homebrew? And maybe if you can tell us what your first project was, that'd be cool as well.
Well, we've already mentioned George Dobbs, G3RJV, and it's his fault, really, that I build radios. As a young, newly married guy, I got into amateur radio and realized very quickly I could not afford commercial gear. It was way above my pay grade. And I'd kind of almost given up. And then one weekend, I got a copy of a magazine called Practical Wireless, which I don't know if it comes over in the States, but it's popular in the UK. And in there was an article by George on a radio called the PW7, which was a 7 megahertz transceiver. And just reading that made me believe that I could do it. I could build this. And I used a soldering iron, but I wasn't into electronics per se. But it really made me believe that I could do it. And one of the guys we were with said, well, yeah, next week, come up to my shack and I'll show you, and we can do a little bit of soldering and things. So I had a kind of an Elmer to help me along the way. But I followed George's article, and it was sort of month by month. You built up this transceiver a block at a time. And at the end of it, I always say I started building that radio in 1983, and I've nearly finished it. in fact, it's here. I thought I'd dig it out, and that's the radio. It's got the VFO in the middle, audio and so on, switches and things. And
built the enclosure too?
No, that came from a company who no longer exists, but George used to recommend them. They're called Minford Engineering, and they used to do a great range of the enclosures, but sadly they don't exist anymore. But it's undergone a number of modifications, that radio, but I've learned so much building it. It's really been fantastic, and some of it is still original. The VFO is still the original VFO, and things, but I think I changed the receiver board and I changed the transmit board, and every time I modify it, I make some contacts with it. It's great fun. So that's how I got into it, purely from an economic point of view. I just couldn't afford commercial gear, but I just so enjoyed it so much. And you read the theory to get your license, and then building stuff like that brings it in, makes it real. And I always describe myself as an amateur. I've got no professional links with radio construction or anything like that. I'm not an engineer. But I've learned so much through building. And once you've done one, you start another and then another and another. And one of my friends said to me, how many radios have you actually built? I was embarrassed. I don't know. And I sat down and made a list of them, and I think it was 84 at that point.
Wow.
don't tell Mrs. H that.
That's crazy. Yeah. Well, so that's kind of encouraging, though, and it's a good point to make. What you just said there was you have no background in electrical engineering, electronics engineering, or any of that stuff, but yet you started out, and somewhere you started out somewhere, and then you just start, and then obviously you were following a magazine, you had an Elmer. And you were able to progress, and it sounds like the university or the degree that you got was just a rig by rig trial and error from the very beginning.
Yeah, pretty much. And as I always say, you learn more from the mistakes than you do from the things that go right. And one of the, I just quoted it in an article I've written that that actual radio, the first circuit board I built just didn't work. And I checked it and I checked it. I couldn't figure it out. In those days, we had to write letters. So I wrote to George Dobbs and said, you know, I've built this thing of yours and it doesn't work. Can you help me? And it turned out that the transistors I had had a different pin configuration to the ones that George had used. They were the same part number, but a different manufacturer had put them in a different way. So try flipping them around. And of course, as soon as I did that, it worked. And again, a little bit of knowledge like that from someone who's been there, done it, got the T-shirt, helped me. And I try and repay that now by helping other people. So
very good. So that kind of leads to my next question I had, which, so first of all, by the way, congratulations that you've been doing it this long at 80 something rigs. And you've, it sounds like you've made it just enormous progress from not knowing a whole lot to teaching others how to do it. So that's very impressive. So the next question is what projects do you think are best for beginners who, I mean, I know that you have the philosophy that, you know, where you start is with kits. And you work out a few kits and stuff like that, and then after that, then it comes to the homebrew, like the you know, you grab a schematic and then you source all the parts. And so, I mean, kit building, you know, after a while you get pretty good at it. I think in a short while actually, and then it's time to move on, I think. And so, for those of us, myself included, who are ready to kind of dive more into the homebrewing, what are some good circuits that are good to start with that would be a good place to, you know, begin your journey?
Okay. Well, I think kits, first of all, have got their place. And to start building, you know, from day one, a kit gives you some confidence that you're going to build something that's going to work. It's been tried. It's been tested. And just last weekend, no, 2 weekends ago, we ran some workshops at Bletchley Park, which is sort of kind of famous. We had 2 workshops with young people building FM broadcast receivers, so they were listening to pop music and all that kind of stuff, and they loved it. It was absolutely fantastic. And I've got to give the guy a plug. Kanga UK are there's a Kanga US, there's Kanga UK. Paul, who's running Kanga UK, does some fantastic kits, simple things, the FM broadcast receiver being one of them. He does a Morse tutor. He's got a very popular kit at the moment called the Rooster, which is a QRP transceiver, single frequency. It's not even single band, it's single frequency. But they're going great. So kits have got their place, but you're quite right. You get to a point where you think, okay, it's a bit like painting by numbers. I can do that now. What's next? And one of the things we started, well, it must be 2, if not 3 years ago now, was what we called a scratch build group. So the GQRP club hosted this project to build one of Pete Giuliano's projects, which was called the Sudden SSB transceiver. And without providing a kit, we provided instructions on how to build each module. But you had to go away and source your own parts, build your own printed circuit boards and all of that. But again, with a circuit that you kind of knew was going to work, and we have an IO group so that you can get help from other builders and a couple of mentors. And that's been really successful. People have loved it. And not everybody's finished the project. You know, these things, life gets in the way sometimes. And but we've had lots of videos of people using the receivers, and one guy built it and said he had a first contact, I think, just a couple of weeks ago. So so that's really good way to go.
So how do you get involved in that group?
Well, you've got to be a member of the GQRP club, and then you just drop me an email and say I'd like to join the scratch build group, and then we get you going. And awesome. We're keeping it secret. It's a matter of bounding this thing rather than just putting the information on the website and a million people diving in and then asking random questions. We try to keep it as a sort of bounded community, just to manage the volume of questions and also so the information doesn't get perhaps out to someone who then commercializes the thing and things, which has happened with other projects like that. So, that's smart. Yeah. But yeah, that's how we do it. But there's so many things in Sprat that you can turn into a project without too much difficulty. If you've built a few kits, you know what the layout should broadly look like, and that will sort of guide it. Start simple, I think, is the best advice. You know, some people, I'm going to build this, multi-band, multi-mode SSB CW transceiver and really that's just too ambitious. A DC receiver or something like that, or even a bit of test equipment. Tony was on. He had a book, I think it's still available, on simple test equipment. So building something like that is a good start to move away from kits into homebrew. And
Tony Fishbowl has a book on that.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that book, Tony. If you're still listening, send me an email or something. I'll try to get that, or just put in the chat where you can find that. I'd like to get one of those, because that kind of brings me to the next question, which is, I think I've tried a time or two to start breaking away from kit building and go into homebrew. But even with kit building, if I build a kit and I run into a problem where I don't know why it's working, I don't do anything with it, because I am inexperienced with troubleshooting, not only with not having the right gear, but also with not knowing what to do with the gear. I mean, sometimes understanding how an oscillator works and using an oscillator, not an oscillator, a oscilloscope can be very challenging. But, even an RF probe, you've got to understand what you're getting in that reading, or you're not going to know, and you need to know where to poke it and what to touch. So that's kind of what I was going to ask you next is kind of, what are the basics of troubleshooting homebrew projects? Like, where would you start if you knew something wasn't working, and kind of where would you go from there?
Well, I think there's two things. If you're starting from scratch and you're building a circuit from the very beginning, building part of it, testing it, make sure it works before you move on to the next bit is the way to go. I've seen so many. A guy, one of our students, built a project, and I think the PCB was about 12 inches by 12 inches. And he just turned up, it was fully populated, and said, "Why doesn't this work?" And it was like, "I have no idea." It could be soldering, it could be a duff part, it could be anything. But if you build a section, test it, make sure that works, and then build the next section, then you've got a reasonable chance of success come the end. And that was part of our scratch build. You build one module, test it. Once that works, you build the next module, and so on. If you've got a piece of equipment that has been working and no longer works, then that's a slightly different challenge. But if you've built it, you probably understand how it works, and therefore it's easier to dive in and know what you're looking for. I think the best thing, and for many, many years, I just had a multimeter. I didn't have any fancy gear at all. And there was a series in one of the UK magazines called Are the Voltages Correct? And usually, if you probe around transistors and things like that and look for the voltages, just DC voltages, you can usually track down where something's not right just by looking at those things. That, if suddenly there should be 12 volts there and there isn't anything, there's probably a short somewhere. Or one side of a resistor, there's 12 volts, the other side, there's nothing. The resistor's gone dead, So it's about being logical and using the circuit diagram and just sort of following things through from the basics.
Go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, some of the gear that you can get now, though, I mean, it's amazing. Things like the Nano VNA. I built so many filters and just kind of hoped that they were aligned properly and, do it by ear. Now you plug it through the VNA and you can see a trace on the screen and very quickly make adjustments and things. And these things cost, next to nothing. Whereas when I started, if you had a spectrum analyzer, you were like NASA or something. It was not within the realms of your average home brewer. But spectrum analyzers and VNAs are quite commonplace. But a multimeter and an oscilloscope is probably all you need. And there's some really good resources on how to use them, particularly on YouTube and so on. There's an American guy, NA2 something, I forget the call sign now. He has a paper on the QRP Club website, how to use an oscilloscope. And I refer to that on a regular basis if I forget what I'm doing. So.
Yeah, good. Good. And obviously, if you are starting, you have a project you're starting with, then that project, you'll want to test it and see. And so that's how you learn to use the equipment as well. So yeah, it's like you're learning kind of a dual track. You're learning how to build a kit, but you're also learning how to troubleshoot it. So that's why you should start small and in small pieces, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the build-a-thons we did last year was that we built a power meter, which you can use as an SWR indicator or purely as a power meter. And the joy on people's face when they see it works, and they've got an idea then of how it works and how to calibrate it against 50 ohms and things like that. And these things are not magic, they're not difficult. It's just a matter of knowing what you need to do and the process to follow. So it's that thing about building up your knowledge and your understanding slowly. Don't try and jump in the deep end and do something that's a huge project, because it invariably just will not work.
Yeah, good. Okay, so there's my friend Shane from Colorado says, that's encouraging to hear Steve's success with building radios. I want to be an electrical engineer, but work too much to go back to school, so I study electrical engineering content on my own time. So that's a great approach there. Yeah, for
absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely.
And then Richie's Radio Room. This is Sparky. My friend, he's always contributing. So thank you again for doing that, for adding a little bit more to the coffers to help us with all of our expenses there, Richie's Radio Room. Appreciate it.
Super.
Okay, so the next question then is, why in the world do you like QRP?
But partly, I think my love of QRP is because I've always done it. From that first radio that I built, I've operated QRP, but I have operated much higher power stations in my time. But I found with a high power rig, it was a bit like shooting fish in a barrel. You know, it was just too easy. Whereas with the QRP, you've got to maybe be a little bit more skillful, search out the right stations to call. And I don't know, it's just it's what I do. And I enjoy it partly because of the homebrew thing, that you don't need lots of equipment. And what I found with the higher powered stations, it's not just the radio, that you need a higher powered ATU, you need better coax, you know, there's all sorts of risks of causing interference. All those things just multiply up with the extra power. So life's much simpler with QRP, you know. You don't need to worry about frying the neighbors with the electromagnetic radiation or anything like that, because it just doesn't even meet the thresholds, you know. So there's all sorts of benefits, from safety and interference and budget. You know, it's not an expensive hobby if you keep it simple. It's awful easy to fill the shack with some very expensive black boxes, and you're still only going to probably make the same contacts. But I've got nothing against people who use commercial gear. I've got some commercial gear myself, but I much prefer to use the simple homebrew stuff. It just gives me a kick. And particularly if you've built it yourself, to then make contacts with it, it just sort of gives you that endorsement.
Yeah, very good. So do you enjoy portable radio, or do you operate QRP from the shack, or both, or what do you do there?
Okay. Excuse me. I used to do quite a bit of portable work on VHF, and had some success with there was a series in the UK called the Backpackers Contests, and both on 2 meters and 6 meters. You'd find me in the summer sitting on top of a hill somewhere with a wire antenna or a small beam. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. As my legs have got sort of less strength in them, so I've done less of that. So I tend to operate more from home these days, but I love going out. I've done a few sort of mini D expeditions on the Scottish Islands. We went to the Isle of Man once and made ourselves very popular there, activating the Isle of Man. And I love it. Again, it's a different challenge when you're out there and you can't just nip back to the shack and get what you've forgotten. You've got to make do. And I remember being on top of Snae Fell, which is right on the Isle of Man. It's the highest point. And with two or three friends, we went up there. We took the antenna, we took the feeder, we took the radio, we took a lithium battery. But forgot the cable from the radio to the battery. So one guy spent the whole time with a piece of wire holding it in position onto the battery and things. But we were up there for about 20 minutes and we made 20 contacts. It was fantastic, you know, just with a bit of wire and a bit of improvisation. So yeah, I think I sent you a photograph when I'd operated on 2 meters in the Lake District in the UK. That was great. The middle of summer, June time, worked all over the UK, and then the static noise started to rise. I didn't know what was going on, and ended up in a hailstorm on top of this mountain, right in the middle of summer, and I had to stop operating because it was just so. There you go. That's a picture. The mountains in the distance, you can see that's the highest mountain in England. A place called Scarfell. I was on a mountain called Grassmoor. Actually, a guy came up to me and asked me what I was doing. I think the Football World Cup was on, and he thought I was listening to the results from Italy or something, which was interesting. But that was great. You know, as you can see, it's not a big mast. It was, I think, 2.5 watts of SSB, and had great fun. So, yeah, yeah. Done a fair bit of that.
Very good. Well, so I'm kind of curious. So you build most of the time you don't build kits anymore. You build these homebrew radios, and then you want to get them on the air. Was there a time where you took these out into the field, or did you just usually use commercial equipment for the field? Go ahead.
So the VHF stuff, I've got a mixture. The 2 meter stuff, I've never had success building 2 meter gear at all.
Who has?
That was commercial gear. But on 6 meters, I have a transverter which I built. It runs from I've actually got two. One's got a 2 meter drive and the other's got a 10 meter drive. But they only produce 500 milliwatts. And I'd go up the hill with those and either a beam, or I ended up using a thing called a bi-square antenna, which is a wire, kind of a dipole folded into a diamond. And that was great. It had quite a broad beam on it, but with that 500 milliwatts working into Croatia and these places, Italy, absolutely unbelievable that you could do these things. A mixture of commercial and homebrew for 6 meters, certainly.
Okay, so then when you finish a QRP project these days, you plug it into your antennas and your whatever you have there at home, then, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, what is it that you have at home? Do you have towers and beams, or just a dipole, or what? What do you got in your garden?
Okay, on the back of the house, I've got a thing called the cobweb, which was a UK guy designed it. It's like a nest of dipoles folded into a square, so it looks like a spider's web because each of the dipoles looks like sort of looping around. I think MFJ sell a version of it now, which goes up to 6 meters. My version does from 20 meters up to 10 meters. So that's my main antenna. We have planning restrictions in the city of Bath, so we're not allowed to go beyond the roof height. So that's on a pole on the back of the house, and it's absolutely level with the top of the house. So that's I'm just about keeping in the legal framework. But I've also got from my workshop, which is the bottom of the garden, an off-center fed dipole. Which is on 10 megs, and I've been using that recently and having some great fun with that. And the other antenna which I sometimes break out is a, I always forget the full title, the twin terminated folded dipole, which is a bit of an odd thing. Everybody says it's just a dummy load, but I've had some great contacts with that. But it's a very low noise antenna as well. It doesn't pick up a lot of noise. I've got a whole bunch of wires and things in the workshop that I'll break out when I'm out there. In the field, I used to take out a quarter-wave vertical for 20 meters or 17 meters. Really effective and super cheap. Just a fishing pole to hold it up, three radials that act as guys. Fantastic results with those antennas. I've got all the four after things. I've got some SOTA things as well from... SOTA beams, if they sell in the US or not.
Yeah, we have to have them shipped over, so it gets expensive. Yeah.
So I've got some of the dipoles and things which are really good.
Yeah. Okay, Zippy says, I love high power for DX. I love QRP because the radios are simple to build. Then he mentions the Michigan Mighty Mites are a lot of fun. And I started to build one of those and didn't get it done. That's promoted on, again, on Solder Smoke Podcast. They have a something, there's a, what, they have some sort of a contest, not a contest, but an encouragement to build one of those on your own.
Absolutely.
And they use a color something crystal, so that's like some liberation. I can't even remember. It's been so long. Anyway, fun stuff.
Color burst crystal liberation army.
That's what it is. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. I've used high power. When we were up on the Isle of Skye, I actually got in trouble. I was using 400 watts and I was causing interference in Melbourne, Australia. These guys came and said, you know, we've come to see where you are because you're causing us, the local net was getting some sort of bleed over from my transmissions. And when they found out I was on the Isle of Skye, they were queuing up then to work me because they'd never worked the Isle of Skye before. which is a bit scary that amount of power can cause that problem. But equally, I was sitting at my desk here one day with the radio on. I was listening to a guy in Australia running some kind of special event station in a park. And he said, are there any QRP stations listening? And there was silence. So I went and grabbed the microphone and called him. And we had a QSO. I was running 3 watts of SSB. And we made the contact. And I got the QSL card and everything to prove it wasn't fake. So you can still work DX with QRP. I've worked New Zealand, Australia, States, Canada, well, you name it, with QRP. So it's not, certainly it doesn't rule out the DX. It's not as easy, but it can be done.
Yeah, for sure, absolutely, I agree. Let's see, you may or I don't know if you know Mike Zero, Bravo Mike November, but he just gave us £5. So thank you so much for that. That's cool. I really appreciate that.
I think that's Paul from Kanga.
Is it?
Yeah. So I'm guessing from the sign there with the kangaroo.
Let's see. I wonder what his website is. Kanga. What's it called? What's his?
Kanga UK. We should get you there.
Kanga UK. All one or? Oh yeah, there it is. Here, I'm going to post that in the chat. That's cool.
You know, Paul does some great work, and he helps us out a lot. The workshops we did with the kids, you know. He even got the logo for the charity that I'm a member of on the PCBs, and the kids loved it. It was fantastic.
Very good. Okay, so let's move on then. We've only got, unless we go over, we've only got 7 minutes. But I wanted to ask you who it is that inspires you that's in the QRP or homebrew community right now?
Well, Pete Giuliano, I have to say, is the radio guru, the fantastic guy, and so willing to share his knowledge and experience. Hans Summers, another guy who's got some great things. But if you're looking for kits, again, Hans has got some great kits, and he helped us out when we were running an event called Youngsters on the Air. He designed a radio for us to, and we had 90 kids. Built these radios, and that went on to become the QCX, which many, many people have built. And but yeah, we had it first. the kids loved it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So yeah, but I have to say, every time this Sprat magazine comes out, there's some inspiration in there. That the members continue to produce some amazing projects, and every year we do some awards for the best article for antennas, the best article for simple things and various things. So at the end of the year, I have to go back and read through these again, as do the other committee members. And I have to say, at the end of the year, you just get blown away by the great things that are in that the four editions of Sprat for that year. There's inspiration around every corner.
Good. Yeah, I put in the chat the qrplabs.com, which is where you can get the QCX, QDX, all the all of Hans Summers stuff. And then I also put in the Solder Smoke podcast because that is where you can hear Pete Giuliani mostly, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And he's got some great websites, on various websites that he keeps swapping and changing. But There's detail on how to build our convention, the simple SSB transceiver, the sudden SSB transceiver. And he did a project called Let's Build Something, which was, again, a way of getting people to do things themselves rather than with a kit. That was in QRP Quarterly. And that information is still on the web and really good to still to follow. There you go. That's it.
Cool. Well, so next question then is what I think we've talked about resources and where you can go for more resources. So I'll skip that question. What about what's your in your opinion for you? What's your greatest ham radio accomplishment, do you feel?
Oh, wow. Probably the very first contact he ever made. I remember being absolutely frightened to death that I'd heard a guy calling CQ, and I called him with my homebrew transmitter. And when he returned, I nearly fell off my chair. You know, that was such a brilliant achievement. But other than that, I think helping others. As I say, the distance learning course that we run, we've had 1,000 passes now at the top level. That just blows me away, and I think that's an achievement not just for myself, but the whole training team that work with us. If we can give something back to bring more people into the hobby and to follow on behind us, so when we're no longer here, they'll keep it going. Then that's got to be a great achievement, I think.
Very good, very good. Well, so you've given a lot of good advice. I really appreciated you being on. We've only got about 3 minutes here left, but we can go over a little bit if we need to. But I just have one more question, and that one is it's more to kind of add on anything that you that we maybe didn't talk about. Because the question is, what advice would you give to people wanting to get into homebrew and people that are new to homebrew or even new to kit building? We've had a lot of great pointers here, but would you, if you were sitting here talking to somebody, what advice would you give that person?
I persevere with it, because it's awful easy that, you know, something goes wrong and you think, oh, that doesn't work. You throw it to one side. Try and figure out what's gone wrong, because by understanding what's gone wrong, you'll learn far more than if it worked first time. You know, if you put a kit together and it just works, really learned a great deal. Whereas if you've got to troubleshoot a little bit, and then I've got a guy recently actually contacted me. He built a low pass filter and it was too low. It was cutting off below the frequency he wanted it on, and through a few exchanges he tried a few things. He's now discovered what the problem was, and he that knowledge will stay with him for a long time. So persevere. Don't be afraid to ask questions. You know, we the number of times I've put transistors in back to front, or, you know, a diode in the wrong way, or I've shorted something out. You know, we all make these mistakes, hopefully not too often, but you learn from them. So don't be embarrassed to say, hey, you know, I've got a problem here. What's gone wrong? There's usually somebody out there that will help you, and without judging you as well. You know, I don't think there's, you know, certainly the QRP community is very helpful. That there's no sort of egos and things trying to sort of beat you up because you've made a mistake. They're more likely to offer you help and get you out of a hole.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up here, but I do want to give a few more minutes just in case somebody in the chat has another comment or question, specifically a question. If you have a question for Steve, please drop it in there. We'll give it just a few seconds because I know there's a delay, and plus you'll have to type it. So while we're waiting for that, I just wanted to give you an opportunity to let people know where they could find you, because I understand. Well, so first of all, you've got a Twitter, social media place. Is there other places you need to go? Plus you have a YouTube channel. So kind of talk a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, my Twitter thing is just at G0FUW. So you'll find me there. And I'm not particularly active, but I do post things from time to time. The GQRP Club has a website. If you just Google GQRP Club, you'll get there. And there's tons of technical information, all sorts of other stuff on there. There's the GQRP IO group, which will get you lots of information. And you can drop me an email, g0fuw@gqrp.co.uk. I'm usually online most days. I can get a reply to you and point you in the right direction if we can.
Okay, and what about your YouTube channel?
Well, again, I've got one of my own, which is predominantly to do with training and just general there's video that I made about coax loss and things like that, which has thousands of views. On who these people are, I don't know, but you find it useful. But the GQRP Club, again, if you just go into YouTube and put GQRP Club at the top, it will take you to the channel. There are links from the website. I forget how many videos there are, but there's all stuff about infant antennas and SSB transceivers and building gear, engineering, a whole raft of topics. So lots of good stuff.
Okay, good. Well, nobody took the bait. We have nobody has any other comments or questions. So we're just going to wrap it up. Steve, it has been such a pleasure. I can't tell you enough how grateful I am that you agreed to come on and talk a little bit about homebrew. It's definitely an interest of mine. And I feel like as many people we can get involved, the better. So thank you. And thank you for all you do to get more people involved in ham radio through your Bath DL thing, I think it is. And you know, all the different things that you are involved in, it's a testament to the fact that you care a lot about bringing others into the hobby. So I appreciate that.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I've been very enjoyable.
Yep. All right. So we'll catch you. I'll just hang around here as we end, and then I'll catch you on the backside, and then we'll say our goodbyes offline. So thanks to those of you who are in chat, those of you who have joined, and those of you who will be listening later. We'll catch you on the next one. I'll say 73 for now, and we'll catch you. Bye-bye.
73.